Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited
by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus. From Variety, I'm Michael Schneider.
I think Justin Theroux is very interesting to watch, despite how good looking he is. Just a lot of Justin Theroux in that episode, which I'm not complaining about. It's usually, you know, as an actor, I'm trying to bring back the paunchy belly and the not-so-fit vibes, because I feel like, you know, I don't want to look at someone who's that much better than me all the time. You know, I want to look at
characters for the rest of us.
Yeah. So I forgive Justin Theroux for how incredible he looks in that moment. And it doesn't get in the way of me buying any of his acting or any of what's going on, which is nice.
Yeah.
He's so good in that whole series.
You know Natalie Morales from series such as The Middleman, White Collar, Parks and Recreation, Santa Clarita Diet, and the Gone Too Soon series like Trophy Wife and The Grinder. Now she's the star of NBC's Abby's from Mike Schur and Josh Malmuth. She's quite simply a fan of good storytelling, which is why The Leftovers is on top of her list of favorite TV series ever. And her favorite episode? International Assassin from Season 2. On this edition of the podcast, we talk to Natalie Morales about The Leftovers, directing for the Duplass brothers, how she's making history with Abby's, and even why Cardi B should star in a reboot of The Nanny. It's my favorite episode.
My favorite episode's about to start.
Favorite episode.
Coming real, it's the next episode.
Written by Nick Hughes and executive producer Damon Lindelof and directed by Craig Zobel, The Leftovers episode International Assassin was a key episode for the series. It aired in Season 2 on November 22, 2015. In this episode, Kevin, played by Justin Theroux, finds himself in a hotel that's a bit of a purgatory, and he discovers he's chosen the role of international assassin, tasked, of all things, with assassinating Patty Levin, who in this realm is a presidential candidate. Or is it Patty? Perhaps it's the girl in the pool.
Would you like some water, Senator?
Never touch the stuff. Kevin, I'm sorry about all the security. I don't know if God has told you, but we received credible intelligence that someone may be trying to assassinate me. Now, why do you think someone would want to do that?
Murder me.
Well, I don't know.
It's because I stick to you, Kevin. Throughout history, assassins have never been motivated by money or revenge. They're motivated by beliefs. And their targets embody a belief that enrages their would-be assassins. Why? Because secretly, they share that belief.
For Natalie Morales, The Leftovers was a show that she never let pile up on her DVR, as she was compelled by the show's unique take on life, death, metaphysics, relationships, and more. She also loved how quirky the show could get, referencing the Wu-Tang Clan and obsessing over perfect strangers to the degree that Mark Lynn Baker even appeared as himself. Of course, it was tough to pick just one episode to highlight. Well, Natalie, thanks for stopping by.
Thank you for having me.
Doing my NPR voice right now.
It's great.
So I gave you some homework.
Yes, you did.
Your favorite episode of TV of all time.
That's too hard, Mike.
It's a hard one.
I refuse to narrow it down.
Yeah, I
must. I just narrowed it down to one of my favorite TV episodes of all time.
Okay, so before we get to that then, what were some of the bubbling under ones? What were others that...
Well, a lot of it had to do with my ability to go back and watch them and what was available on either Netflix or HBO Go.
Okay, so you wanted to do homework, not just like what you recall. You wanted to make sure
Or at least watch it because I didn't know how in-depth we were going to discuss it.
Uh-huh.
But yeah, I mean, there's episodes of all the shows that I'm like, oh my God, Atlanta especially has a lot of episodes that I'm like, this is the best thing I've ever seen, right?
Every week, right?
Yes.
You're like, okay, that was the best one ever.
You know, there's episodes of Game of Thrones that I feel that way about. There's a lot, but I think this one that I chose, I remember being sort of astounded by it. And I don't think it's my favorite episode of that show, but it certainly is one of the most astounding episodes of TV. I think that show had a lot of moments that I loved rather than complete episodes that I would say are the best things of all time. I don't know. Did you watch the? Did you watch it?
Yeah. Yeah. So it's Leftovers.
Yes.
International Assassin, which was the I forget which number episode, but it was in season two.
I think it's eight.
Yeah, episode eight, and yeah, that was interesting season because season one of The Leftovers I enjoyed. You know, the whole guilty remnant. There were some interesting stories that were great as standalones, but it seemed like season two was the season that they really Damon really figured out what the show was and where he was going with
it. And then season three was completely a whole new beast. It was one of my favorite shows to watch, sort of. I never was backed up on it. I would always watch the episode as soon as it came out because it was so, whatever they started doing episode to episode was like always innovative and cool and turned the show or what you thought the show was on its head, like getting that Wu-Tang tattoo. Like there's all these amazing little beats on that show that are so good. Yeah.
Well, the whole like Perfect Strangers.
Yes.
Mark
that
Lynn
part
Baker,
was,
like,
I was like, this is so deeply funny.
Yeah.
And only this show could get away with it. And it's exactly the kind of show I want to make that does stuff like this.
Yeah.
You know, it's, I loved the Mark Lynn Baker stuff so much. I loved that he was there. It made me so happy.
Yeah. Yeah. And then the fact that he faked his disappearance is the most amazing part. He was just so hurt that the rest of the cast had departed except for him.
Yes. It's so
poor
good.
Cousin Larry.
And then they had the theme song as the theme song is so good.
Yeah.
It's such a great, I loved what that show was doing for the like TV format. It was like, no, why does it need to be what you think it's going to be?
Yeah.
It could be whatever we want it to be. It doesn't matter.
And
it's very exciting.
Yeah, it was one of those shows where immediately after watching, you had to go online and see, okay, I know how I felt about it, and I know sort of what I thought of this, but really, like, what did this mean?
Right, and what does everybody else think, and what are your theories on everything?
Yeah.
International Assassin is definitely one of those episodes because it's so metaphorical in so many ways.
Yeah, because in the previous episode, obviously, Kevin had died. So sure, okay, did they just kill off?
Yeah.
Justin Theroux? Like, what's going on here?
It was a great way to... I mean, I don't know that I thought he died immediately. I think in the middle of this episode, I was like, oh, he's in some weird middle space, I think.
Yeah.
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 He hasn't exactly died yet.
Almost like a purgatory, but yet you're still not 100% sure. Is this, you know, all in his head, what is going on?
Right,
And the Patty of it all, of course, as well. Like, having to kill Patty several times.
Yeah, in different forms.
Yeah.
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 I know. Looking back on that show, I think it's like, obviously, a lot of The Leftovers is in Kevin's head, right?
Mm-hmm.
A lot of the show is in his head. And even this particular part, you know, the idea of him having to beat Patty in some way, you know, beat the nemesis in this video game, just keep going for like the big bad guy, right? Is that in his head too, right? It's a battle that's being waged in his own sort of soul and not necessarily out in the world.
Well, I think the most telling thing is early on when he comes out of the bathtub and he's in his hotel room and he's like, what the fuck's going on? And then he goes to the closet and it says, pick your
choose your own adventure.
Choose who you
thing.
are.
Yeah.
And of course he's a police officer and there is a police officer's outfit in there, but he doesn't pick that. He picks the suit that turns out to be the International Assassin suit. And it is that whole question of him still figuring out, like, who am I here? What am I doing here?
Mm-hmm.
And you know, inadvertently picking something that he's not and then having to go through the motions of pretending to be this person.
Right. But is he not that? Because he can fight pretty well.
He does.
And he looks the part, right?
Yeah.
He could be, it's sort of all the things one person can be, you know? We contain multitudes, Mike. And I just think, I don't know, as I think Justin Theroux is very interesting to watch, despite how good looking he is.
Well, there was some peak at Thoreau ass.
Yes,
hashtag Thoreau ass
in
that episode.
Just a lot of Justin Thoreau in that episode, which I'm not complaining about. It's usually, you know, as an actor, I'm trying to bring back the paunchy belly and the not so fit vibes, because I feel like, you know, I don't want to look at someone who's that much better than me all the time. You know, I want to look at
characters for the rest of us.
Yeah. So I forgive Justin Thoreau for how incredible he looks in that moment. And it doesn't get in the way of me buying any of his acting or any of what's going on, which is nice.
Yeah.
He's so good in that whole series. It's just great.
Yeah. Up until the end. And you know what's interesting when you mentioned season three is, you know, when they wrapped season two, they weren't so sure they were getting a season three. So in some ways season two could have ended the series, and season three was almost a bonus.
A
it went in a whole different direction with the Australia episode.
With hints of what happened in the second season, because during this particular episode, you see his dad talking to him from Australia.
Yeah. With a weird FaceTime that's fueled by fire of some sort.
It's so, and then the whole, throughout this whole episode, he's being told he can't drink the water.
Yeah.
And it's such an interesting thing. I mean, I love, this is so boring, but I love dreams. I love the psychology of dreams. I'm one of those people that's like, someone's like, I had a crazy dream. I'm like, tell me everything. I'd love to hear that. And this whole episode has this sort of dream logic, right? Like, I can't drink the water and this person's scary and there's a bird flying around and there's a fire alarm going off. And it's really interesting to like connect all the dots and figure out why everything is happening.
Yeah, no, it's interesting. Michael's grandfather, who is there as the concierge, mm-hmm. who ends up killing the bird and then admitting that he drank the water.
Right.
So something happens.
Right. Something with the water. And Michael's grandfather had shot himself.
Yeah.
So he wasn't. Was he also in that world with Justin or with Kevin, or was he a figment of Kevin's imagination, right? Were they in the same plane because they were both just freshly deceased?
Yeah.
Or was it just all Kevin's head?
By the way, that's a great hotel.
Yeah.
Like, especially like...
I wonder where they shot that.
I think it's in Austin. I think it's a... I want to say it's a West... I feel like I've actually stayed at that hotel during ATX. And
I don't know if it's because people are speaking Spanish throughout the whole episode in the background, but I always thought it was somewhere, like some other country. Maybe it just made me feel that way.
Yeah. Only because I know they shot that season in Texas.
Right.
So I'm assuming it's probably that hotel in Austin. I could be wrong.
Yeah.
But... yeah, no, it's an interesting idea to shoot an entire episode there, and in some ways it feels like very nondescript. That hotel room and that hotel, there's nothing fancy about it. It seems like very run-of-the-mill Western chain hotel, and yet this is
sort of like an upscale chain hotel is the thing. I know, it's a cool thing, and I also loved the score of that episode. I mean, The Leftovers always had great music, but I wrote down who that is.
Yeah, because I remember reading somewhere that they were inspired by Die Hard.
That episode?
Yeah. They wanted to have Die Hard-like music. Like, you know,
it's
full...
It's so big and...
Yeah.
Nabucco. It's Verdi. It's Verdi. It's Chorus of the Hebrew Slaves. Is that whole thing. It's so very epic.
Yeah.
And it has, like... stakes to it, just the music does.
Yeah.
It's very exciting.
So and the background of that episode and the sequel that they did the following year is it was Nick Cuse, who's Carlton Cuse's son,
mm-hmm.
who, you know, ended up working with Damon on this show, and Damon sort of became like a little bit of a mentor for his buddy's son, came up with the idea of like he wanted to do like a James Bond / Die Hard kind of story.
I didn't know that.
And so he talked to Damon about it, and they crafted this idea of the International Assassin.
That's so cool.
And it kind of just turned into this very memorable special episode.
Yeah. I wish more shows would take risks like that. You know, you have 8 episodes of something. Why not, or whatever, how many you get.
Yeah.
Why not go crazy?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Well, and the good news is it feels like in this age of, like, so much peak TV, hashtag peak TV. People are willing to do that. Yeah. I mean, there are a lot of these anthologies.
I mean, Atlanta does that sometimes. Yeah.
Yeah. And even like a show like Atlanta almost is like an anthology show.
Yeah.
Because every episode has a very different tone or very different direction.
Yes.
And of course, you know, you recently worked on an anthology show in Room 104 with the Duplass brothers and directing an episode and starring in an episode. And the idea there, of course, is every episode's different, different tones, different chances. Seems like a lot of fun to be, like, working in TV right now and being a creative in this.
It is. Especially, like, directing. So thankfully, because of the Duplass brothers giving me this opportunity, I've been directing for a while, but it's sort of in the music video space, and I made a lot of Funny or Die videos, and that was and shorts and different things like that where you don't need to join the DGA. And when you do TV, you have to.
Yeah.
So they were sort of my door into that, and now I'm able to direct more TV episodes. And I was having this conversation with my agents where they're like, well, what shows do you want to do? And I realized, like, oh, I don't want to do any boring stuff. There's so much cool stuff right now.
There's
I don't want to just do an episodic of somebody. Like, I don't care about that.
Yeah.
I don't need to make...
You're not doing an NCIS episode.
Yeah. Not to knock that show, but I don't know that would be that fun for me specifically to direct, because what I find fascinating, it's so hard to direct. It's so hard. There's so much work put into it. You have to have this whole thing in your head mapped out with every answer available to anyone who asks. And if you're not like interested in it or passionate about what you're doing, it's that much harder.
Yeah.
So I just want to do like shows like Maniac or Atlanta or like shows that are doing something sort of epic. You know, I like that idea. Well, a lot of these shows, you have to sort of stick to the style and the tone that they've set. They let you play and come up with stuff. I mean, I think The Leftovers did that as well.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah.
Well, what's interesting is, you know, for the longest time, the director was sort of second-class citizen in TV because it was all about the writer, and the director was work for hire. They came in for one episode, so they couldn't really
it's
impact
It's still like
much.
That in a lot of TV. Yeah. And Duplass Brothers, like, really... I mean, I'm spoiled now. Like, that's the TV I've done. So I'm like, I don't want to do some show where I can't do whatever I want, you know?
Yeah.
They're so wonderful. I mean, Mark wrote the script that I directed, but after that point, he was like, it's yours. Do what you want to do, you know?
Yeah.
So it was fun to do.
What sort of interested you in doing directing? And do you see it as sort of like a side, or is that something that you see yourself gravitating more toward balancing with your acting work?
I truly love it. I think what drew me to it, I'm very observant, and since I first started doing TV, I would stick around and, like, on The Middleman, which is my first TV show that I was a regular in, I would just, like, while they had breaks, I would just stick around and watch, like, how they loaded the camera and what the different lenses were, and I think the bigger part of me, people always ask me which one I prefer, and there's really no answer. They're very different, and I like doing them both. Mostly what I like is problem solving.
Yeah.
So I like cooking, I like art, I like directing, I like acting, I like getting chaos and making it something, you know? And so directing is sort of in my field, and in some episodes of television, is the most control you can have. I mean, obviously you don't have control after your director's cut and then you let it go, but it's sort of like I realized that when I was directing Room 104, I was like, oh, this is why I like this so much. My entire job is just having an answer when someone asks me what I think.
Yeah.
I know that. I always have an opinion about something. I have an answer for you, and that my job is to have an opinion on something. I can do that.
Yeah.
That's so fun.
Yeah.
And I just have a really since I was a kid, I have a really visual brain. When I started directing music videos, because I always hear songs and see a video in my head.
Yeah.
And so I started doing that for my friends, and then for people that weren't my friends, and then other bands, and I just like bringing something to life. I don't know. It's really fun.
Was that, you mentioned as a kid, where how arty were you as a kid? Like, what were you into?
I was into Magic. Not The Gathering, just plain Magic.
Yeah. Just like Doug Henning style Magic.
Yeah, I would put on a lot of Magic shows for my family, who graciously sat there bored through all out of it. And I would create really elaborate scavenger hunts for my cousins, because we all went to my grandmother's house, which is where I lived as a kid, and they would go there after school just because for daycare basically. Mm-hmm. But they got home, we went to different schools, and they got there half an hour after I did. So I'd use that half hour and just make an insane scavenger hunt with whatever candy I could scrounge up as a prize. So I liked that. I liked doing stuff like that.
Yeah.
I feel like it's all, obviously now I'm like, oh, okay, I get why I enjoy curating things.
Right.
Because
so.
It comes from wanting to impress my cousins when I was a kid.
Yeah. But that's good. Obviously creating and coming up with a story and a narrative in a
I
way.
I loved inventing as a kid. I invented, maybe toxic, who knows? I invented a removable nail polish that you could peel off as a kid.
Yeah.
And I remember showing my family, and they were like, who would want that? That's dumb. It was made mostly out of wood glue.
Yeah.
But I was always inventing something. Yeah. I was doing experiments all the time. I just liked that. I liked problem solving and creating.
Are you still inventing now? Do you?
I like engineering to like solve problems. I definitely have like always have some weird scheme in my head about something, but I'm not inventing as an inventor.
You don't have any patents.
No, I don't have any patents right now. I wish I did. I wish I was the Hedy Lamarr of today, but I am not that smart. But wouldn't
nice.
That be great?
That would be on top
Hedy
of everything
Lamarr
else.
Was simultaneously the first woman to simulate orgasm on television and gave us the internet, basically like wireless internet as we know it today. It's crazy. She's awesome.
So that could be a goal. The modern day Hedy Lamarr.
I'd be fine with that goal. That's great.
No, it's always funny when you hear about stars who also ended up like being a major part of an invention.
Yes.
Like it's like Bing Crosby and the VHS machine.
Really?
Yeah.
I didn't know that one.
Yeah, I think that's one of them. And then, of course, who was it? Mike Nesmith from the Monkees, his mom inventing liquid paper, White House.
Oh, wow. See, I'd settle
weird random
to
stuff.
Bring it back full circle. I'd settle being a spy like Julia Child. That'd be great. I would love to do that. That'd be very cool for me.
Or an international assassin.
Exactly. Not an assassin. I don't know how I'd do about. I mean, listen, I'd be very good at killing people, but I don't think I'd want to.
Yeah.
I'd be a very good assassin, obviously.
Right.
It's not morally. It's not something I'm into.
Yeah. So it's last resort.
right.
Basically.
Yeah.
So speaking, going back to Leftovers. So you were a fan from the beginning. Did you watch Lost as well?
No.
Okay.
Never watched Lost. Yeah. Even though a good friend of mine worked on it, but Javi Grillo-Marsach, who created The Middleman. No, I never watched Lost.
Yeah?
No, I missed it entirely.
Did Javi ever give you shit for not watching Lost?
No. But yeah, I think he maybe appreciated it because I wasn't
hounding
him
for questions about, no, what was really in the hatch.
Yes. What is the smoke monster?
Yeah. No, there's still a lot of like hurt feelings, I think, among some of the
Lost fans.
Lost, and also producers who kind of were given quite a hard time by the fans.
Yes.
So,
you got to escape that from me. Yeah.
What is your relationship with fans?
I don't know. I think it's an odd thing to be an active fan of someone past a certain age. I feel like.
Uh-huh.
Or at least the machine that we've like built to make people be fans, I don't necessarily respect in that way. Listen, I'm a fan of a lot of people. Maybe it's the term stan that I don't appreciate because it literally is an amalgamation of stalker and fan. It comes from that Eminem song.
Yeah.
That's where it comes from. And I don't know, like, get a life. Don't be a stan of somebody.
You could be a fan.
Yeah,
you
could
be a
fan. Like, you could appreciate someone's work, but I think it's this terrible machine of fame that has, you know, been created to take money from people and oppress people and make people think that they're not good enough and that they should be like these other people. That's what I don't appreciate about it. So I'm just like a person who likes to play pretend. I always think about it relatively, right? Like, people seem to be interested in my career. What if no one cared about actors or directors? And what if they cared about like scientists and scientists were the celebrities, right? It's just a job that we do that provides some service to the society and people, I don't know, for some reason, it's been turned into this thing, I guess, because a lot of actors are pretty, that it's you have to be like them somehow, or you have to adore them somehow. And I just always sort of bucked that. I think that's very odd. However, I appreciate so much anybody who likes anything I do, because the only reason I do this, well, I shouldn't say the only reason, because I did do it partly for myself. I grew up, I mean, every Cuban is a born entertainer. That's just a fact. Even the shyest Cuban will tell you a story in the most fascinating way. But I definitely grew up with this sort of need to entertain and perform and curate experiences for my cousins. But at the end of the day, I'm like, there has to be a reason for me to do this. And what am I bringing into the world? And I've thought about how much happiness and open-mindedness TV and movies have brought to my life. You know, I've been introduced to things I would never know because of television. I think Will and Grace had such a big effect on how people viewed the LGBTQ world when it came out. And I think that movies and TV can really do a lot for the world. So I'm happy when people tell me that they've seen my work and that they like it, because I've affected them in some positive way, I hope. Yeah. But the idea of the fan star relationship is very odd to me.
Yeah.
I just don't think it should exist in the first place. I think it's a weird machine that people don't realize is oppressing them. You know?
Right. Yeah. Right. Well, and social media obviously has made that much more prevalent and much more sort of confusing, I think, to a lot of people.
Yes.
It's blurred the lines between fan and celebrity to some degree.
But that's not the part that bothers me. I like that there's more, that the lines are more blurred, that people see, you can see people's everyday lives, I guess, in a way. Not that I'm very public. I'm certainly not. I don't want people to know what the hell I'm doing at any time. I do like the balancing of the scales in a sense. I don't like that, but it's just a weird, Jamila Jamil is recently doing this whole thing where she's calling out all these people who are selling these detox teas that make you lose weight, and when really they're just laxatives, and it's all these celebrities on Instagram hawking this tea, and she's just like, don't you know this is you're selling this to young girls who are impressionable and are going, oh, I want that flat tummy, and you're not telling them they're going to be on the toilet for hours and that that's all it is, you know? So it's that machine that is what bothers me, and the people that perpetuate that machine, that go hey, all my fans. No, they're just people.
On the other hand, though, you're able to also inspire and serve as a role model to some degree. And you know, that's the positive part.
Right. But I hope to do that to people that are friends of mine, to people that are family of mine, not just to, you know, I don't want to sort of pontificate from some mountaintop. You know what I mean? I think everybody's got something they can do for the world. This is my weird thing that I chose to do.
In a moment, Natalie Morales on Abby's fan culture, including why she dislikes the word stan and why she didn't love A Star Is Born. From Variety, this is My Favorite Episode.
This is Daniel Holloway. Join me every Friday for TV Tape, Variety's podcast about the television business. In every episode, we feature interviews with stars and showrunners from today's hit shows, as well as conversations with Variety journalists about the key TV headlines of the day. Subscribe or download to TV Tape wherever you get your podcasts.
And we're back. It's My Favorite Episode. I'm Michael Schneider. Natalie Morales is our guest, and she's currently the star of the new NBC comedy Abby's, in which she plays the owner of an unlicensed backyard bar that attracts a vibrant local crowd in a San Diego neighborhood.
These are tough days for America. The only thing we can agree on is drinking alcohol. So we need to do this for America.
This tastes like the inside of a Santa suit.
We're gonna find Abby.
Who are you?
Abby's landlord. Is this a bar in my backyard? This is super illegal. You gotta shut this down right now.
James, kick him out.
I don't like confrontation.
You're the bouncer.
I know, it's messed up.
I'm gonna turn on the charm, make him feel like he's part of the group.
Yeah, that could work. Get in there.
Hey, Bill, buy your beer?
No, thanks, I'm fine.
Well, that was my big gun.
Abby's is unique as it's the first ever multi-camera sitcom with a studio audience to completely shoot outdoors on a real backyard stage. But it's also unique as the first network sitcom with a Cuban lead since Desi Arnaz, and believed to be the first sitcom with a bisexual lead. This looks to be a really fascinating show, the first outdoor multi-camera sitcom ever. And you're at the center.
I'm at the Abby. Helm, yes.
So how's it been going?
We just wrapped last week. We did 10 episodes, and it was truly one of the best experiences of my life for a lot of reasons. Obviously, I love working with Mike Schur, who created Parks and Rec, who's a producer on this. I think anything he does is fantastic. And he's especially good at what good multicams need, which is a core group of people that you want to be friends with, right? Yeah. Like all the best multicams, Friends or Cheers or How I Met Your Mother, they all have that group of people that you want to hang out with.
Right.
So I knew that I could trust him to do that. And then there's Josh Malmuth, who is a playwright and was also a writer on Superstore, who created the show, who's amazing. And so I was like, okay, I wasn't just given the role. I auditioned like hell for it. I don't think anybody writes a person named Abby and considers me as the first person on their list for that. I don't look like an Abby necessarily. but I loved what they were doing, and I'm so happy that they trusted me with it in the first place. And yeah, where we shot it, it's set in Abby has a backyard bar. An illegal makeshift backyard bar.
Which I love. I love that idea.
Yeah, it's sort of the speakeasy of the neighborhood.
Yeah.
It's in San Diego, or it's set in San Diego. And so we shot it in the back of a house on the Desperate Housewives Wisteria Lane Street at Universal Studios. They built a whole backyard bar set, and then they built a bunch of bleachers and seats, and the audience would come with us every night. And it's on the side of this mountain in Studio City, California. And we shot it... we never shot it indoors. We built another set just in case it rained or something. But we shot every episode outside.
Right, you just missed the rain.
Yeah. It was so. Did you say that you came to one?
So I came to one, and it was fascinating because all the interesting things that happened, like you guys would have to stop when the helicopter went by, and they were telling me about the time a skunk came by the set.
I didn't know about that.
Yeah. Apparently, a skunk came right up to the set, and no one was quite sure.
Oh, I did hear about that. He was by the trailers. Yes. We have like bar snacks, and there was definitely a little family of mice that was into the Chex Mix.
Yeah. So all the things you generally don't have to worry about when you're indoors.
Right. But... you don't have to pause for helicopters or cars or sirens when you're in a studio set. Also, something that's really that I loved about just the look and design of it, it's all practically lit. There's some very little studio lighting, but mostly it's just like string lights. It looks very different than most of the things you've seen.
Yeah. No, it looked very inviting. I actually wanted to hang out at that
bar. You should have. It's really fun to come there. I hope we get to do more of them because it was really kind of an amazing experience. I think I was telling you this the other day, but like, even just the what we're doing is, besides the fact that it's outside, what we're doing is cool. They just told me I'm the first Cuban American lead of a sitcom since Desi Arnaz, which means I'm the first female ever.
Yeah.
And also, I think I'm the first bisexual. The character is the first bisexual lead of a sitcom, of a network sitcom.
Yeah.
Which is so cool.
Yeah.
And it's not one of the main things about her in any way. It's just one of the, like, she has brown hair, she's bisexual, she's Cuban, she owns a bar. It's one of the many, many, many things about her. It doesn't define the show. Our show is not about that. But it is about all the aspects of all the people that come to this bar, you know? And I really love that about it.
Yeah. No, and that sounds like Southern California,
yes,
right?
Exactly.
Like, where everyone is unique and has a story to tell. And that's normal.
Yeah.
So that's great, too, on its own.
Mm-hmm.
And the fact that it's just like, well, this is... you know, yeah, it's the first, but, you know, hopefully it's not the last.
Exactly. And I mean, I've been really lucky with that in my acting career thus far, is that my characters have just happened to be Latina, you know? They're never about that. And while we certainly need representation in general in, like, many fields that I happen to belong to some of, it does annoy me that a lot of the times... when we get representation, it is given to us by people who are trying to fill a sort of a category or whatever, or don't actually, there's a lot of well-meaning white people who try to tell stories that are not theirs.
Right, right.
So why not just write a character and cast whoever's the best person for it? And maybe they're black, maybe they're Latino, maybe they're Asian, maybe they're whatever, you know? And so I've been really lucky in my career that I've gotten to play roles of people who just happen to look like me, but it's not about how I'm oppressed or, you know, or about my otherness.
Yeah,
it doesn't define the character.
It just happens to be a part
of it. Which is what I think we need more of. Yeah. As much as we do need stories that explain why we've been oppressed in a certain way, we need so much more of like, hey, this is a regular person in a regular life.
Right, yeah. Right. And the goal is if there are just more stories overall,
exactly,
you get it all. So,
exactly.
And that's the hope. And,
exactly.
And maybe because we are in the age of hashtag peak TV, we're getting there.
Yeah.
We're getting better.
Yeah.
So, another thing that sort of highlights your TV career is the heartbreaking aspect of it, which is you've been on several shows that are
met their demise.
Yeah, yes. Heartbreakingly met their demise. You know, you mentioned Middleman, Trophy Wife. Mm-hmm. Still love that show.
I loved that show too.
So bummed that didn't go the distance. And
it
of
was
course,
so fun.
The Grinder.
Yeah.
So a lot of, you know, shows that us, you know, who write about television, we're rooting for.
Yeah.
And just for whatever reason.
I know. They were too good.
Too good for this world.
Yeah. It's, I mean, I've been really lucky in that, like, I don't think I've been on one sort of crappy show. Like,
yeah.
I feel like I've done such great things that I was either a fan of before I was on as a guest star, or I was so lucky to be a part of from the beginning. Trophy Wife was awesome. I'm still friends with all those people.
Yeah.
And The Grinder as well. Like, I had such a blast on those shows. But yes, that is, I hope it's not some sort of curse because this is what I'm hoping. I'm hoping that Neil Flynn being on Abby's counteracts the curse of me only ever having one season of anything.
right. So
we'll see what happens. I hope that there's sort of an in-between there.
No, it's hopefully.
Neil Flynn has an insane track record. Like, he was on Scrubs for 10 years or whatever.
Yeah. And in The Middle.
Immediately got onto The Middle, like literally the next thing. And that went for 10 years. And then he shot the pilot of this the day after they wrapped The Middle.
Yeah.
So hopefully and it got picked up. We were all like, if this gets picked up, it's because of your luck.
Yeah. Well, and as you mentioned, Mike Schur's got a pretty damn good track record
as
well.
Yes,
he does. So, you know, in Mike Schur we trust, as we say.
We do. It is hard to get, I mean, to the credit of NBC, they really, especially with The Good Place, like, that's a show that would have been canceled so quickly anywhere else because it's so linear. You can't just jump into it. You have to, like, watch it from the beginning and know what the hell is happening.
Yeah.
So I'm glad that they let that ride out, you know, but it's like, it's so hard to get anything on a network these days. It's really hard. Yeah.
Yeah. And connecting you to the Leftovers universe, when you think about the Shuraverse, I know Mike consulted with Damon, talked a lot to Damon when
about
he was
the
developing
Good
The Good Place.
Really? I didn't know that.
So, and they had, they had a lot of conversations about philosophy and, you know, the kind of things that obviously he tackled in The Leftovers and Lost and, you know, pop up all the time in The Good Place.
Mm-hmm.
So it's an interesting age where we are sort of discussing some of these headier issues as well.
I love that. Why make the same things over and over again, you know?
What else do you watch these days?
What have I been watching?
I
just got off of work, so I now can, like, watch things. I caught up on The Good Place.
Mm-hmm.
I've been watching Big Mouth Season 2, which I love.
Yeah.
I've been watching Maniac, which I really like so far.
Yeah.
I think it's really cool.
Yeah, that whole universe is interesting. What if, like, technology had gone one direction?
Yeah, what time is that in?
Yeah.
It's very interesting. You don't know. I mean, I think I'm on the third episode. I don't know what time it's in. I just saw, this is not TV, but I just saw The Favorite to go back to Emma Stone. So good. I'm very excited about that movie.
Yeah.
It was really good. I've gotten to go to the movies and, like, watch TV. So that's fun. I'm excited. But there's, like, I feel like now is a little bit of a lull in TV, right? There's a break for the holidays and then stuff comes back
Well, right now it's all the Christmas movies.
Oh, yeah.
It's,
my mom loves those.
Those are taking over. The Hallmark and, yeah. and Lifetime, and now Netflix has a bunch as well. So.
Yeah, I saw A Star is Born, which I did not enjoy, and I watched it with my mom, and she was like, it doesn't have a good message. And I was like, Mom, not all movies need to have, like, a message. They're not parables. And she's like, well, all my Hallmark movies have a good message, and they all end pretty, and I like them very much. And I was like, all right, that's... If they make you happy, that's what it's for.
Exactly.
So good, yeah.
They tie it up with a bow. They're
yes,
all basically the same film.
She loves it. She's seen every single one. Every yeah. single one. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. It's always about some journalist who yeah. is traveling to another part of the country and meets some guy.
Like
and,
a pastry chef yeah. or a princesses who switch.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And there's a cute dog
yeah.
in the mix. Yeah.
So, usually with an engagement ring tied around his neck.
Yeah.
Yes. Did we just write one?
I think so. That's been optioned by Lifetime.
Damn it.
You said you didn't like Star is Born.
No, God, no.
Yeah.
Is that an unpopular opinion?
Well, you know, it's funny. It's one of those...
I feel bad critiquing someone's work because it's something that obviously a lot of people put all their work into. And I definitely don't knock them for that.
Yeah. And there are parts that are really enjoyable and the music.
I think Lady Gaga's amazing.
Yeah, yeah. It's what afterwards, like days later when you start to pick apart the story that you're like...
No, it's during.
Yeah.
It's during. It's not days. It didn't take yeah. me days. And there was a lot of... I feel like... I wrote this on Twitter. I mean, now I'm immortalizing it, I guess. But I wrote it on Twitter and then I deleted it because I thought it was too mean. I've been on this kick where I'll think something mean / funny. I'll mm-hmm. tweet it and then I'll be like, yeah, I'll delete it. Because I just don't want to put that out in the world.
Yeah.
Why be mean for no reason? But I do think it's funny. So I will say yeah. here. I said, I saw A Star is Born. I give it... 3,600 eye rolls because I did spend a lot of the movie going, oh, brother. And it was just like, I don't know. I thought it was a kind of sexist.
Yeah.
Even though I you know, I loved that there's like that Jackson Maine is open minded about the gay community. I liked that aspect of it. It just was like, oh, when the girl gets famous, it's okay. Like it was just. It was very to me. It was very indulgent.
Yeah.
Which is not the kind of movie making I enjoy. But that being said, people worked hard on it. A lot of people loved it. So it's not for everybody, but a lot of people really like it.
The music's catchy.
Sure, yeah.
And you're right. Gaga is great.
Gaga's really good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So what did you like growing up, by the way? What were your TV shows or movies as a kid?
Well, as we were talking about a little bit earlier, I tend to veer into insomniac territory. Very often I have since I was a kid. So I watched a lot of Nick at Night growing up. That was mostly what I watched.
Yeah.
So my favorite show as a kid was Taxi.
Oh, wow. So you were yeah. like when they were doing the 70s
yes,
shows on Nick at Night.
I loved Taxi and yeah. Rhoda and Bob Newhart. And I just was a big fan of, I mean, there was Cheers on there. There was like a lot of 70s SNL.
Yeah.
Watched a lot of Gilda Radner. Like so much. That may have been. Besides Buster Keaton, which I discovered later in life, Gilda Radner was a huge inspiration for me growing up.
Yeah, I bet.
Because I was like, oh my God, you can be funny? You can be funny and people still like you?
Yeah.
You can make people laugh with you, not yeah. just at you? And it was, I watched a lot of that. So much I Love Lucy, lots of Nick at Night. I watched The Simpsons and obviously Saved by the Bell, but... And then there was TGIF, which I was like religious about. I watched like Full House, Family Matters, Step by Step, all those, very into that.
Yeah.
I think Sabrina the Teenage Witch was on there for a little while, maybe, or was that different? Yeah,
yeah, that was some TGIF as well. I like how you said obviously Saved by the Bell.
Obviously, I mean I'm, you know, a child of the '90s.
Yeah, so yeah. That just comes with the territory.
Yeah, yeah, Saved by the Bell was after school every day. It was on.
Where do you stand on reboots? Do you?
It depends. Like I said earlier, I feel like I like new things. Why do we have to rehash stuff, especially if it was already good, right? Why not keep the good thing? That being said, I think reimaginations of things are fun, especially if you're a fan of them or whatever. There's certain reboots that I really dig. I think, I don't know if this is happening. Is there like a new Bad Boys movie coming out? I feel like I saw something about
that. There's like a TV show that's kind of evolved.
The Gabrielle Union one, yeah. But no, I think Will Smith and Martin oh, I almost said Martin Starr, which would be hilarious. Not Martin Starr.
That'd be a very different show.
Martin Lawrence.
Yeah.
But there are certain shows that I'm like, that are things that I'm like, yeah, I'd see that. Like, I would totally, God, I sound like such a douche quoting my own Twitter, but these are my true thoughts. I usually don't believe in non-actors taking acting roles because, well, there's a lot of actors that work real hard for it, and then you just cast someone who's like not very good and sort of famous. However, that being said, casting Cardi B as the nanny in a reboot of The Nanny would be so brilliant. And I would watch that. So there are certain things that I'm like, oh, that would work, you know, and certain things that it's kind of like, why are you touching that? Leave that alone.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know?
Did you come up with Cardi B doing The Nanny, or has that been out there?
I don't know. It was a thought I had when I saw her dressed in literally a nanny outfit talking to Instagram, and I was like, oh my God, she's the modern nanny.
That's incredible.
Yeah. Like, I'm sure a lot of people have had that same thought. I think actually when I wrote it, people sent me a thing that said Fran Drescher said that Cardi B should play her daughter in a reboot of The Nanny. So I guess the nanny, but as her daughter. So maybe Fran Drescher thought the same thing I did, but yeah. It's so good. Yeah, I don't know. I'm not against it entirely. There are some things that feel like sort of an eye roll. And so, when it's a very obvious money grab, I think that's when I'm like, oh, God, you know?
Yeah.
But Will and Grace coming back is fun. And like, it's all the same people, and that's a fun thing.
Yeah, sometimes yeah. I see sometimes your old friends nice. Again.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
Any of your previous shows that you'd like to revisit? Like, if they...
I mean, I guess when talking about my own life, it feels weird because then it feels like sort of going backwards instead of going forward, you know? However, if it was like a movie, that'd be fun. Like a middleman movie or a middleman something would be so fun. I'd love to step into that.
That pops up every once in a while, like talk of like doing something.
Mm-hmm. People always ask me about that,
specifically
the middleman, including my mother. She's like, oh, you need to do that again. I'm like... Mom, I've done other stuff. You only care about that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So we mentioned Abby's. Anything else you're excited about coming up that you could talk about or you're...
I mean, yeah, I'm excited about... really excited about both Room 104 episodes. Yeah. They come out, I think, a week apart. The one I'm in, acting in, is first. The one I directed is later. I wonder if they can hear the rain. It's raining in Los Angeles.
Yeah.
And that's a rare thing.
Yeah, that's something excited to be looking forward to.
I just think I loved working with Mark and Jay, and I loved how they run their whole thing, and it was really fun to do. And I mean, like, having my first TV directorial debut be on HBO is really exciting.
That's pretty cool,
too. It's really cool for me. I'm, like, overjoyed about that.
Yeah.
And I'm excited to see what happens with Abby's.
Yeah, me too. So fingers crossed, more episodes there. And the Room 104 episode that you star in is delightfully creepy. And funny enough, is apropos to your insomnia.
Yes, that's I've never done horror. It's my first time.
Yeah.
I'm excited about it.
Had you done, so what about multicam? Had you ever done an...
Well, I did do the pilot of a multicam, and then I got recast.
Oh.
Yeah. I did Are You There, Vodka, It's Me, Chelsea.
Oh, yeah, I remember that.
Me and three different people got recast, and we all got converted into one character, which was fun.
Yeah. I always feel so bad when that happens, because, it's like, especially if you get to the point where you've taken publicity photos.
Oh, that's all the photos are on IMDb. It's me and Lauren Lapkus, and who was in that, and, oh, my God, why am I blanking on her name? She's delightful. She's on Orange Is the New Black right now. She played Chelsea on that show. Why can I remember her
name? Original Chelsea?
She stayed as Chelsea.
Okay.
Laura Prepon. Sorry.
Okay.
God, my brain blanked for a second. There's pictures of us on IMDb. There's promotional shots from that show. It was very stingy at the time, but it was fine. Chelsea Handler, who I had barely met while we filmed that, was the only person who called me and apologized, which was really nice.
That is nice.
Yeah.
Because I always wonder, like, how you find out and...
Well, you know, some people are nicer about it than others.
Yeah.
Some people are kind to the people who work with them and, like, and whatever, and some people don't care.
Yeah.
Which is not fun.
That's
another podcast.
Yeah, exactly. That's the less enjoyable part of this business.
Oh, yeah. And it's hard for me because I am not good at not calling people out.
Yeah.
I have written emails of being like, hey, you're a dick.
I like it.
I have a hard time with... I think my favorite thing beyond problem solving, My favorite thing in life is putting people in their place.
Yeah.
I do enjoy that.
Yeah. Well, that kind of goes hand in hand a little bit.
Sure. I mean, well. I just mean, like, no, you're not going to get away with being this way.
Yeah.
You're just not. I'm not going to let it slide.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You are a good director.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I'll look forward to more of that too.
Yes.
We'll keep paying attention to you on Twitter. So
all right.
So and
I'm
stop,
sorry for what I do.
Stop deleting those tweets. That's gold.
I don't want them to be. I don't know. I'm very conscious of what I'm putting out in the world. You know.
Yeah.
I don't want it to always be super negative. If I'm feeling something funny, I just have a sort of a dry sense of humor sometimes that I think is funny, and I'd like to share that in the moment to the few people who happen to catch it. Like I'm in a room, you know.
Yeah.
And then it's gone.
Yeah, exactly. It's like a Snapchat.
Yes, exactly.
So,
yeah.
And then there's enough shit going on in the world.
Exactly.
Anyway,
why put any other bad stuff out there? There should have a version of Twitter that's like Snapchat, where it just disappears after 24 hours. That'd be fun. You know, another Twitter box, Twitter stories.
Yeah, yeah. It would be fun, except probably not. What we don't need in this world is more social media.
That's true.
I think
we need less. And less accountability.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So I think that's called Nazi Twitter.
Right.
Or just Twitter.
Twitter,
yeah.
In general.
Yeah.
Yeah, I know. It used to be a fun website.
Yeah, yeah.
Now I mostly stay off of it.
Yeah, yeah. Because Nazis.
Because Nazis. And also because, like, it used to be for jokes and, like, fart jokes.
Yeah.
And now it's not. Now there's always something horrible happening.
Right, exactly. Now it's destroying democracy.
Yes.
Hey, on that note.
Nice talking to you.
So great seeing you, Natalie.
You too.
Congrats on everything.
Thank you.
Yeah, looking forward to the Abbeys. And, of course, check out those Room 104 episodes. They'll be living on HBO going now forever. So,
yes.
So we'll look forward to those,
how
too.
Exciting.
So, well, thanks, Natalie. Great
Thank
talking
you.
To you. Good luck in the rain.
Thanks.
Be careful.
Boy.
Be safe.
All right. Thanks.
And that's it for this edition of My Favorite Episode. Join us again next time as we once again explore another guest pick. And be sure to subscribe to My Favorite Episode on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, or anywhere you download podcasts. Also, head on over to Variety.com for your daily fix of TV news, analysis, and reviews. I'm Michael Schneider, and we'll see you again next time.
Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino. That's right. Chumbacasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18+. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.